Hello, and welcome to a special Golden Globes and Oscar edition of the Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and today I'm bringing you an exclusive interview with Jonathan Pryce, star of Netflix's The Two Popes. Here he talks about working on the acclaimed film and with longtime friend and playful rival Sir Anthony Hopkins. He also talks about finding the character of Pope Francis via the excellent script by writer Anthony McCarden, and he also dives into his thoughts on the world's troublesome political environment. Now, as you listen to the podcast, you'll notice that the recording jumps directly into our conversation. So the preamble not sort of captured here is my beginning the conversation with my recollection of seeing him on Broadway in his Tony-winning performance as the engineer in Miss Saigon. He jokes about how that ultimately led to his starring role in The Two Popes, which you'll hear at the start of the podcast. So please sit back and enjoy my interview with The Two Popes star Jonathan Pryce. And if you haven't seen The Two Popes, it's currently streaming on Netflix.
He watched film of me, he saw the two photographs, but he said he also watched a video on YouTube of me. And he said, and I saw qualities in him that were like Francis. So I was...
In the engineer?
I never asked him what this YouTube video was. And at Christmas he sent, actually, to tell you the truth, this is what I saw. And he was joking, and he sent me the clip of Miss Saigon.
Oh, wow.
I don't think that was quite the one he watched, but there you go.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Pleasure. Thanks.
A real honor. So, starting with The Two Popes, obviously, how did you, you know, when you look at the task of taking on playing a person who is not only going to become Pope, as we know, but torn on that decision, how do you get in that mindset of as an actor?
I was initially... not quite fearful, but a bit reluctant about taking it on, only because I thought I'd be on a hiding to nothing, that I'd neither present what people wanted to see or present an accurate enough picture of him. That was from the phone call from my agent saying they wanted to play Pope Francis, and I hadn't read the script then. So once I read the script, and also knowing that Fernando was going to be directing it, it was something I really wanted. I had no qualms about doing it. And just, you know, it was on film, it's a very visual medium, and I would thought I was, I look like him enough to, you know, get by. I still feel very sympathetic towards him. Not necessarily as a leader of a organized religion, but as a world leader and a leader for change in society. I liked what he was saying about the changes we had to make in order to secure the environment, and talking about climate change, talking about the economy, and especially what he was saying at the time about the refugee crisis and how we all should be able to help and government should help. And so I was sympathetic to him, and as is the script, but it also doesn't, it's not a hagiography, it presents enough of him, of his doubts, you know, when he was accused of, I was going to say conspiring with the colonels,
right.
Collaborating with the colonels. He admits that he got things wrong. Benedict admits he got things wrong. I felt very, as confident as anything. I mean, I could draw in terms of my career. I've taken on things like My Fair Lady, where everyone goes, is he going to be as good as Rex Harrison?
Sure.
I've done Oliver, where everyone goes, is he going to be Ron Moody? And I, you know, I'm arrogant enough to say, well, I don't even think about those people. There's a sort of the confidence, I wouldn't say arrogance anymore about the Pope, but there's a confidence that I could do him justice, you know, and especially working with Fernando.
Right.
Yeah.
So one of the unique things I know, I've talked to, you know, some of the production, Mark, who did the production design, built the Sistine Chapel. One of the things I know is unique, and perhaps I think this is the way that Fernando likes to work, is you had that space constructed in Rome that was representing the Sistine Chapel, and they gave you the opportunity to actually go in there and almost like a piece of theater to rehearse it extensively. Did you draw on your theater background to help you find the character?
I see. Well, it's the characters is drawn. I've been asked this question in a Q&A. How did you build the character of Francis? And I found myself saying, I didn't. He did. He built the character, and I follow.
Right.
You know, and it's, in some ways, it's quite liberating to know that you're following this real line,
mm-hmm.
Because it gives you a freedom to exploit those moments fully in the... Don't fall off the chair. fully in the script. And it's funny, I found... you say about Miss Saigon. Miss Saigon was my first musical.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd done a lot of theatre before and a lot of Shakespeare. And I was used to working to my own rhythm, even in Shakespeare, even you're supposed to follow, the iambic pentameter, whatever. But I would phrase things my way. I would stop in the where I felt emotionally the character would sort of slow down or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And in the rehearsals for Miss Saigon, I took that same attitude into rehearsing a musical, where you, and that's completely sung through, and there's no stopping.
Right.
And the conductor used to conduct rehearsals, and I got to one point where I was slow. I went, "Now stop, stop! Sorry, I can't." And I remember him saying to me, "Right, I'm not going to allow you to do that ever again. You must not stop." Because I have an orchestra of 40 people, and I cannot stop, and I cannot change things according to your mood. You have to work to my rhythm. And I found, at first I thought, oh gosh, you know, but I found that that discipline was, instead of being cowed by it, I discovered that it was very liberating to work to somebody else's rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit like, you're working to Pope Francis's rhythm, and I found that quite liberating. There was a lot of things I didn't have to worry about. You know, I didn't have to worry, how would my character walk? What would my character wear? How does he sound? It's all there. And it's not an impersonation, but if you sort of lock on to that sort of emotional rhythm that he works on, it was great to do, and I would like to sit here. You know, they're always asking questions. What was the most difficult thing about this? What was hard? And it wasn't difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to sit here going, I had, you know, the pain it caused me and the anguish, and I was able to do my greatest work because of the agony I was going through. Not at all. It was an absolute joy, and also that also came from working with Tony.
Right.
Because he's a consummate actor, and I didn't have to worry about him. Sometimes, you know, you're in a two-hander, a scene, you're thinking, that's not quite how I think he should be saying it, or, you know, all right, I'll have to adjust what I'm doing. It was completely sort of organic between us, and it was like having a conversation with someone, and I was able to listen, because he was interesting to listen to.
Right.
And I find him fascinating. Tony, that is.
Yes.
You know.
Had you ever worked with him before?
We're both on a recording of Under Milk Wood, but that was like 27 years ago.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So this is the first time you've actually been in
a
television show or a film with him. I tried to look back and I didn't see anything.
No, there was a time when you like to think, well, it was either him or me to get the role. And there was a time when he announced... I was in my 40s, I think, and he announced that he was going to retire.
Right.
And there were a lot of actors my age who were going, yes! Now we can have a chance. But he didn't retire.
But he did not.
No.
So I know that, you know, you talked about listening to him.
Hmm.
How do you convey, you know, so much of this is Benedict trying to convince Bergoglio to take that, they talk about the frictures within the church and different mindsets within it.
Yeah.
your performance, a lot of it is reacting to that. It is a lot of it listening. How do you convey that physically without just sort of
being you do there? Just sit there, you sit and listen.
Yeah,
I mean, I've talked to young actors with over the years who are having problems with a scene, and eventually you there's one instance I remember taking the actor on one side and saying, don't stop acting for the camera. Just talk to me. And it was like I remember this actor going, God, this is, of course, that's what I should be doing. And I know it's now these days, like when I started, you were always accommodating a camera because the cameras were generally huge.
Right.
Once they got them in position, they weren't going to move very much.
Right.
And the lighting was very exact. And now cameras are lighter. They're much more flexible. The lighting, well, this film especially is, it's lit in such a way that, you know, you're not having to get in your light all the time. Well, think, am I in or out of light? Yeah. And so all that just enables you to just be and to listen and to, yeah. There's a certain energy you have to have, even though you're saying nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't find that difficult. I'm a better listener than a talker. Except now, obviously, when I'm made to talk. But yeah.
So you must have been, you know, now with everything with actors being de-aged, you know, like in The Irishman with Robert De Niro being de-aged, you must have been happy that they didn't decide to do that for you with the younger Bergoglio, that they had a different actor. Did you have any touchstones with this actor?
With Juan?
Juan, yes.
We met in London, and I think the interesting thing for him was that... And the positive thing for him is that people had no image of Bergoglio as a younger man.
Right.
So he was freer. But his constraint was he had to follow me rather than follow Pope Francis. I was, you know, so there's that. So he watched a film of me and we talked and he tried to emulate speech patterns. And what he did for me was that he put a lot of the Spanish down on tape so I could learn from how he said it. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit of reciprocity. You can look it up, Google. Yeah, reciprocity. Yeah, anyway. Between the two of us. And I can see it when I looked at the film for the first time. I could see it was right. There was just enough, you know, touches of what we were both like.
It didn't feel completely disparate.
No.
Yeah.
But it's... I talked about it with Fernando as well, that the fact that Juan doesn't look anything like me. But he says that it's... because it's a film about change, and it's how a man changes, and it's how Bergoglio changed over the years. Not necessarily physically, but his mind. You know, it's can be seen as a positive thing that it's a different person because you see this change,
right.
And they're talking about it all the time: change or compromise.
Yes,
you know, so it plays into that.
Some of the my favorite scenes in the film, where you know the it's after these intense conversations happen and, you know, they share the pizza and the Fanta.
Yeah.
Those must have been fun scenes to film, you know, because it's you're just letting go and you're just people at that point. I mean, yes, you're wearing the cardinal's robes and you know, obviously Benedict is wearing the papal robes, but, you know, at that point, it's just people talking.
Yeah.
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 Those are great.
Yeah.
I'm sure this was written in the script. What was behind the... him, I mean, you followed him loving tango so much, and then there's the last tango scene where he's saying goodbye. You know, is that something that Anthony had documented? Was that included, that he loved tango so much? Or
it's known that Bergoglio loved tango. Yeah. Yeah, and you see him as a young man in the film dancing tango. Yeah. So that was fun to... and also, we didn't... I can't remember whether there was talk of getting a choreographer in and whether I said no, that would be ridiculous. You know, it is about me trying to teach the Pope to tango. And it's just about clumsy enough to get by, I think.
But
so that was fun to do, yeah.
So given, you know, Bergoglio is very reluctant over the film to take on that mantle to become the Pope, obviously now he is Pope Francis.
Yeah.
How do you think, based on what you understand from him from the screenplay, how do you think he has adjusted to that position?
Well, you were aware of the changes very early on in his tenure, of the changes he wants to make. You see a bit of it in the film, is his rejection of, one of my favourite lines in the film, which is the carnival is over. And he rejects all the finery and the Gucci furs and ermine stoles and things. But I think, you know, he was someone who was... I think he saw an opportunity to lead by example in the way he lived his life, even if in the Vatican. I suppose it's disappointing, as it continues to be disappointing, when anybody speaks up about any of the issues that require change in society. It only works if governments take it up.
Right.
Or it has in the past only worked if governments take it up. And, I think he still finds opposition within the Vatican for the changes he wants to make or wanted to make. It's difficult, but it's you see reflected in him the kind of youth movement about climate change.
Yes.
So the sort of Greta Thunberg effect, and that is what is, you know, that's the grassroots are there in people like Francis, and people respond because they know that governments are not responding. Well, you know. Today and yesterday, what it's not for me to speak about American, well, it is for me to speak about American politics.
Well, it becomes global at that point.
Yeah.
I assume you're talking about Iran.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's in everybody's mind.
And when you're very suspicious of the reasons behind it, you know, and the, it's just a phenomenon. It's a total misuse of power. When you see you can print this or not, but the first, yet again, another rally that he held was in this huge evangelical church,
right,
where you see people praying. It looks as if they're praying to Trump. They're at their hands. And he's saying, we have God on our side. And it's just so wrong.
Right.
Just
it
so
is.
Wrong.
Well,
and they're complaining about the lack of cooperation from other European countries, and Europe is saying, but you didn't tell us. You know, maybe if you'd made a phone call and said we're going to do this, we'd have said, oh yeah, we're behind you, or maybe you should think about this.
Right.
But they acted unitarily, and they can't expect everyone to roll over and say that's the right thing to do.
Given the election in the UK.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that there was such a strong conservative sweep of Parliament at that point?
Not knowing what happened with the Brexit vote.
Yeah.
No, it was kind of a done deal. And a lot of those issues that people are dissatisfied with, the Conservative government, because it hasn't been addressed by them, all the social problems we have there, unemployment, lack of housing, lack of investment in the NHS, all Tory things, but they blamed Labour, they blamed everybody else, the voters did. And they were transfixed by this supposedly, you know, enigmatic figure of Boris Johnson, who maybe he will do some good, I don't know. But we also had a Labour leader who was forever sitting on the fence and locked in his 70s Marxist viewpoint,
right,
and refused to budge from it and showed no leadership at all. And then after the election is in denial. It was almost as if an election didn't happen.
Right. I don't know if you saw, there was something on the BBC called Years and Years. Emma Thompson,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, my wife saw it, and I've yet to catch up with it. Said it's frightening. And
it is.
Yeah.
I honestly made it, it's five or six episodes. I got through three, and I had to take a step back from it because it was all my fears about, you know, extreme conservatism taking over and you know, just coming to life almost.
Yeah.
It's brilliantly done, but it's almost too well done.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Last question. So I'm sure you've seen, when I shook your hand, I was afraid you were going to pop my hand three times.
I saw it. I mean, I felt for him because,
I mean, so many people just caught the image of him slapping her hand. They didn't see, and this is what social media does, they didn't include the image of her nearly ripping his arm out of the socket.
Yeah. You saw it is the pain on his face as she yanked him over.
Yeah.
And then it was, you stopped squeak. I have arthritis in my hands. I have to be very wary when big butch men give me a firm handshake because it's agony, and I know he has sciatica, which is back pain. And she twisted him, and of course everyone jumps on it as he's he's not a wife beater, but the equivalent, that he has no respect for women and all this bullshit.
Yeah,
but
I mean, it's a human reaction. You're in pain, and you know that's
what
I like about him so much, is that he's not. He is a man in that role. It's not the role adopting the man.
No,
you know,
no.
You know, he doesn't get consumed by, I am the Pope and I am going to now act and believe a different thing. He's exactly who he was before he took the role. It's really interesting. Anyway, I think that's everything
okay.
I had for you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And